We acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. This is Cheryl from Djadjawarong country.
Good afternoon, evening, morning, whatever you decide to watch this. Welcome to episode 121 of the Beyond 90 podcast. This is Eric Subihano, hosting on behalf of a fabulous four that we have here for you in this latest episode. So I'll introduce my co-hosts for this time. And I suppose I'll start with the best, because after a wonderful holiday in Europe, Dale Roots is back. Dale, how are you and how have you been? You look like you've had a great time.
I wish I wasn't here, if I'm perfectly honest with you. I wish I was back sunning myself in the Italian sun. But no, it's great to be back. The downside is I have to go to work and all of the good things that come along with it. But no, it's great to be back. It's been too long.
Yes, and I suppose if you're regretting being back, it does mean you picked your holiday destination correctly, at least.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Also, here is College Matilda's admin and the only man who knows how the FIFA Women's National Team rankings actually work. It's Lockie France. So, Lockie, thanks for coming back once again.
Ah, yes, you had me on once. You wanted me back. I'm here.
Cool. And then finally, up in Queensland, Magella Card from the wonderful Matilda's Actor Support Group. How's the week been treating you, Madge?
Pretty good. I'm relaxing before jetting down to Melbourne to catch the Melbourne Matilda's game against Sweden. So looking forward to that.
Of course. And Stefan Mobus, another regular contributor to this podcast, could not be here this evening, but he is planning to go to Melbourne as well. So hopefully you two can catch up and presumably catch up with Cheryl as well. Dale is also going on. So you'll all catch up.
I will purchase a beverage for Miss Magella.
I have to make good on my
promise. I'm getting in on an 8:30 flight, so whether I am coherent and able to verbalize my thoughts, let's wait and see.
Yes, that sounds like good content possible for the next.
Point. I like how you've learned to restrict your beverage promises to one person and not literally
I know.
Everyone.
After my last efforts, for which I sincerely and deeply apologize, yes, I have learned the error of my ways.
Yes, and I remember Eddie from Matilda's Actors Support was very keen in Sydney, just asking where you were over and over again.
He'll be there in Melbourne.
I am very glad that I will potentially get paid the day before we go down. So it shouldn't be too much of a qualm financially.
Yes. That's good to hear. So let's get on with this week's history lesson. So episode 121 and Matilda's cap 121, which is Hayley Crawford. A really stretched out Matilda's career, if that makes sense. Debut in 2003, but her last cap was in 2015. 10 appearances all up for the national team, scoring twice. Both of them coming in an 11-0 win over the Cook Islands at that most wonderful of venues, McKellar Park. So Crawford's debut against South Korea back in 2003, and then domestically played 6 WNSL seasons for Northern New South Wales and 1 for Western Waves. Crawford part of Canberra United's inaugural A-League women's squad before returning home to play another 4 seasons with the Newcastle Jets. And we have linked to an article on Hayley Crawford should you wish to find more about it. Now, just throwing it out there, still a bit before my time in terms of women football, but does anyone have any memories of Hayley Crawford that they're willing to share?
I remember her partly at Newcastle, a little bit, but I remember her mostly during her stint at MacArthur Rams, marshalling the centre of defence for some very successful MacArthur teams.
I was going to say, yeah, she definitely came. I feel my recollection of her is like as a deep-lying midfielder and playing for Canberra, but it would not, as you said, I mean, any player that was playing for MacArthur around that 2012 through 2015 period was probably winning trophies. So, yeah, I mean... yeah, as I said, I remember her from many, many moons ago in the first season of the W League.
Okay, so let's crack on because it's a packed week as always. And I suppose something I'd like to touch base on was something that we just missed with the last pod, which is and actually stemmed off an article from Beyond 90 alumnus Samantha Lewis, which speaking about the unprecedented demand for 2023 Women's World Cup tickets and FIFA saying that they were caught off guard, which seems a little bit ridiculous.
Did they though? I read the quotes. They didn't say they were caught off guard. They said it was unprecedented.
Am I adding my own meaning to it? Okay, that's.
I don't know. When I read the article, it was like the quotes didn't actually say that they were shocked or anything. But yeah, so I don't know. All of my friends were knowing to get in there quick and early. I actually think it's probably a lot of people, maybe the general sporting public, who've always been able to just rock on up and get a Matilda's ticket. Maybe they were the ones who have underestimated just how popular these games are going to be. But yes, good news that there will be another phase released in April, and hopefully there'll be some pockets released, some decent sized pockets released. Maybe some sponsors who aren't going to be showing up might release their tickets.
And fingers crossed that is for all credit card holders, not just Visa credit card holders. But yes, we have to wait till April 11 for the second release. It's a long time, but dare say there might be a few people just
it's wild to me that we have to wait that long for tickets.
Yeah, it's second phase, absolutely mad.
I mean, and I'm speaking of somebody who didn't end up getting a Sydney Stadium pass purely because I was predisposed, but the fact that there's only category one is sold out in Brisbane for the Australia-Nigeria game. Mm-hmm. But both of the USA, or the games that the USA can play in the round of 16 are already sold out. The England versus Denmark game in Sydney is already sold out. Germany, mm-hmm. Colombia is already sold out. Mm-hmm. Obviously the USA games in New Zealand are gone. I don't understand. I look at FIFA and as you said, it's been unprecedented. It's like, yeah, well, you know, maybe we should have thought about that a little bit more instead of, you know, faffing around with other stuff. There's, you know, the most important thing about going to a World Cup, it kind of starts with tickets. Otherwise you can't really get in. So,
and I think especially for the Matilda's games, I think a lot of people went and got the Matilda's passes. So yeah. I think they were really popular. I mean, I don't know any numbers or anything, but and just so reasonably priced. So I think there probably are a few tickets that people have perhaps got up their sleeves. So hopefully there will be a resale platform, which I think there has been in the past. I think the Euros has had a resale platform as well. So now that some people know what games they can and can't make it to, after the draw as well, some people may have bought tickets before the draw was released in different stadium packages. And so hopefully we can this is wishful thinking, but hopefully we'll be able to decouple some of those stadium pass tickets to sell off individual games in a resale platform as well. So
I look back at 2019 and like, obviously the stadium pass that I had for Paris was, I've said this on here before, was an absolute godsend, got to see some cracking matches. But also like the biggest issue in terms of ticketing with the last World Cup was like getting frisked into the stadium. Like it wasn't about having to transfer your ticket to somebody else or present your ID. Like it's the actual ticketing, like getting into the venue with the tickets is fine. So hopefully, as you say, there's a secondhand market. I am laughing at this. I've got Sam's article up at the moment. FIFA spokesperson, it's understood that there have been communication delays between the main FIFA team in Zurich and the FIFA subsidiary office in Sydney based on a 10-hour time difference. Come on.
I think
aren't we better than this?
Yeah, the really disappointing thing, I think, especially with the all credit card phase when that went on sale, was that we didn't have a sale time. And that sounds like that was possibly the issue there in the timing of when whoever was going to press the button was going to press the button. They obviously didn't want to lock in a time for whatever reason. I'm not sure what that reason was.
But
at Matilda's Active, we had people asking us when they're going on sale, and we were just like, well, we're guessing like the rest of you, we don't actually know. And the fact that they went on sale early in the morning for Australian fans, whereas the previous sale phases had gone on sale, like, you know, I think midday, Eastern daylight sort of time. Really caught a lot of people out who were intending to jump on and buy tickets when it was prime time for some other places in the world and potentially.
I was about to say, don't want to kind of rub the conspiracy lamp too much, but 5 o'clock in Central Europe, 5 o'clock PM, which is basically midday, 10 o'clock American time. Make of that what you will.
But again, but it's FIFA. If you're going to do that, just, you know, advertise.
Just tell it. Someone.
Yeah, advertise it. They did it, and they did it for the fact is they put the times up for the other sale phases. So I think that was disappointing.
But even when they put the sale time up, like for the stadium pass phase, the all credit card, so the second one, that was meant to start at 3 a.m. Sydney time. I logged on at 2:45 a.m. thinking, oh, I'll get put in a queue. No, just logged in at 2:45, went in, got my tickets. I was asleep again by 3 a.m. So anyone who actually logged in at 3 a.m. was behind the eight ball, even though that was the time given by FIFA.
I'm just glad that this, like that the ticket sales themselves, like once you kind of take away the timing and all that kind of stuff, like the sales process itself is going relatively smoothly. Like, I'm just glad that somebody like Ticketek or Ticketmaster or whoever else is selling tickets in Australia is not in charge of this. A, there's no fees to print my tickets out. And B, I bought tickets and I didn't throw my laptop out the window. So great success, FIFA. You managed to do one of about eight things well. Congratulations.
Yeah, and one thing that we do actually really like for Matilda's Active, because we want to try and get a group of active fans who want to make some noise going behind the goal, we're being able to get people to link their tickets in the same category three. So we've got that set up. So if you're on our Facebook group, you'll see our little sign-up page where we can send you our code if you want to come and join us and try and get some coordinated singing and stuff going during the games. Because I think that's historically been an issue. Even if you do go to a World Cup or one of these major events, you can't get a critical mass of people seated together. So that's been good having that code. And even just for other fans, just, you know, buying tickets in different groups, they can sort of, you know, link their tickets together and get seated together as a bigger group instead of one person having to load everything up on their credit card.
Yeah.
I think I need to
do
get...
Do not recommend loading everything up on your credit card.
I need to get Eric's ticket code for Ireland, Canada, so I make sure I don't put that number into my ticket so I sit as far away.
FIFA, I would be like to be seated on the opposite side of the entire city from this man. Please make this happen.
Yes. And back to Manager's point about the ticket code. It was good. My mum made the late decision that she would join me for the Brisbane leg of my World Cup adventure. And so I put in a request to hopefully we can sit together. Although when we watch Ireland, Nigeria, I do have about an hour of explaining to do. So she understands why I'm behaving the way I am at an Ireland game. But
it'll be for those of you who work remotely as well, who are listening to this podcast, you'll be stoked to know that most of the games, all the Australian games are 8 o'clock kickoffs or 8:30 kickoffs. Yeah. And I think there's only like four or five games that are midday kickoffs. So like if you start early, you can finish early, you can, you know, whether you take your laptop to the game or whatever, you can fit stuff in. Work from the pub. Your boss should be understanding. You should be able to get a note. Gianni Infantino, write me a note. I'm going to leave the office early. Please make this happen.
And even on times, like I know there's been a lot of discussion around FIFA not getting the broadcast revenue that they wanted from some of the we're assuming the European broadcasters for the Women's World Cup, you know, one of those things because it's on the other side of the world. But I did do a spot check of some of the kickoff times for those games, and they're not too bad. I was looking around, and I think there was maybe only a couple games where maybe it was really bad for like the Canadians or the Americans. But generally, I think, you know, they're either early morning games or so, you know, they might clash with work a little bit, but it didn't look like there was too much graveyard shift. So what's our phrase? The
devil's time slot?
The devil's time slot.
Yeah.
I know.
That's sounding a lot like a them problem and not a me problem, though. So
I know the times aren't great for North America because the Women's World Cup basketball final that was on at 4 p.m. here, it was on ESPN, but it was on at 2 a.m. Eastern in the U.S., So I know that.
That's a six, the... So it'll be a 6 o'clock kickoff, 6 a.m. kickoff for the Americans for the final.
If it's at 8
p.m. Yeah, I think the final kicks off at 8 p.m. Yeah. But that's fine. Drink beer and then go to work.
I was going to say, have a beer with breakfast. Happy days.
Yeah, this is.
It's like Champions League. I love like a 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. Hmm. I can get up, watch the football, and then still make work.
Agreed.
Yeah, well, that's been plenty of discussion, more than I expected with regards to tickets. But I mean, I'm glad that we all have plenty of opinions about what went well and more importantly about what didn't go well. I think the one thing I wanted to say about the April 11th date for the second phase of sales, I believe they've chosen that because it's 100 days to go until the start of the tournament. I guess it's a milestone. Mm-hmm. I think I want a better reason if I'm going to wait 5 months for the second phase, really. But well, it's FIFA frustrating people once again. Let's move on to our friends across the ditch, because the football ferns have announced that they will play the United States in New Zealand on January 18th and 21st. January 18th at Sky Stadium in Wellington, and then on the 21st at Eden Park in Auckland. Now, I was chatting before we started recording, before Dale joined us. That's not in an international window, so that could be interesting for New Zealand. Although Lockie was keen to point out, not so much for the United States. They'll just pick whoever they usually pick.
I was going to say, is this are they the guest team for the February?
No, that's in February, so they are not the guest team. That's just a odd scheduling of international games that will have some could have a large effect on A-League Women, because you'd assume Hannah Wilkinson will be called up. That affects Melbourne City. Massive effect on Wellington, like the kind of might lead to some postponements actually of games, which I hope they sort that out in good time so that people can make the necessary arrangements. But
hopefully no one's planning a New Zealand away day.
I'll go off on a tangent. I've got my own gripe with my New Zealand holiday for February and the Intercontinental Playoffs. I'd like to hang around and watch Wellington versus Sydney on the 25th of February after the playoffs are done. They haven't decided a venue for that yet, and so I am stuck a little bit with that, but that's another story.
The Ferns USA game is Wednesday, Saturday, by the looks of things. So you assume that the American players would fly in on the Friday, have 5 days in camp, and then play. You're right, it is a bit of a weird one because it's definitely no window there, and the US won't, most of the American players, you would assume that they're just doing that to kind of tick along and continue the camps, because they, as we will probably mention, the NWSL finished this weekend, so they're not going to be playing any competitive football for a while.
Yep. Now, I've just looked at the fixtures. Would anyone like to guess where Wellington are 3 days before the first game?
Perth.
Yes.
They are. Oh, well. So that game's probably going to get played in Melbourne.
It's the only person happy about this is Alex Aparkas.
Yeah, they're going to move it to Preston Macedonia Park.
Well, it could also be tough for New Zealand, because you do wonder about their international, their European based players. Will they be getting released to go and play? I mean, that's a profile game. It's a big game where I think New Zealand football would be wanting to get some momentum for the World Cup themselves. So they probably want their stars to come home. So it'll be interesting.
I wonder if they're relying on Scandinavian or Nordic, to use Beyond 90 terminology, Nordic winter breaks.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
That's a good point, actually.
How many of the New Zealand players that aren't based here or in the States are actually in Nordic leagues or leagues that have a break in that time of year?
That might save them a little bit.
1, 2, 3, 4 from their most recent games against South Korea. The rest of them are A-League and in the US, aside from Michaela Moore, Vic Essen, and Elite, and Liv Chance.
Yep, so the US-based Kiwis will, of course, be fine.
You would assume that a number of those players will probably be going to Europe to play over our summer and their winter anyway. So hopefully they'll be – because the other question is – if it's outside of an international window, the clubs don't have to release them.
That's right.
So that'd be another interesting little spanner in the works.
So I wonder if Yitka Klimkova is preparing her sweet talking game for various club managers, but we'll have to wait and see. So other news, I'm not sure how interested the rest of you will be, but I was really interested in this. UEFA announcing a Women's Nations League, which will change qualification for, or their qualification for World Cups, Euros and Olympics. So I'll link to it in the pod notes because it's way too hard to explain, but basically European teams for this Nations League are going to be split into three tiers, and there will be promotion and relegation between each tier. And so this will basically bring what you love or hate about club football in terms of promotion and the stress of relegation battles, combined with international football, and all in really condensed timeframes with six league mini seasons, if you want to call it that. That's going to be different. And I mean, I suppose it's actually good. It will be more competitive games with teams playing teams of roughly the same standard. Cause I was thinking of this and then thinking of Ireland beating Georgia 11-0, 9-0, and England beating Latvia 20-0. Games like that don't help anyone, but I just wanted to know what your thoughts were.
My favorite part about it is that it is going to be used for the Olympic qualifying instead of just taking the top three European teams from the World Cup.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Which was an absolutely bin-worthy way mm-hmm. of deciding which teams go to the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. I think that more to Eric's point around, more to Eric's latter point, I think that there is the way that the European system works in terms of big nations playing small nations in World Cup qualifying, as you say, I don't think it helps anybody. Yeah, it's really nice for Georgia to go and play at St. Mary's in Southampton, or, you know, teams to go and play wherever, like small teams to go and play wherever. But like, I don't think anybody's helped by, you know, Turkey getting beaten 48-0 by Germany or whatever. I think that this kind of, you know, that's why we play, if you play park football, you play in all age fives or whatever, because you don't want to get tonked every week. It's much more fun when you're a social player. And I think that this will help players a lot more. And I think also, like, it means that the lower teams, it means that there's more opportunity to win games to increase their coefficient, because they're playing competitive matches against teams that are going to be as good or roughly as good as them. Which then means that they have more opportunity to improve and more opportunity for more professionalism, I guess.
Yeah. Sorry, Madge.
Well, I was just going to, I haven't looked at the details. So with the different tiers, so I'm assuming, so the lower tiers, there'll be say for a World Cup qualification campaign, there's going to be maybe a couple of spots for them to then.
Correct.
Compete. Right.
Yes. So there is the chance for like some kind of miracle cup run where, so they're called League A, B, and C. C is the bottom tier. There's the chance for someone to win their group in League C, win a bunch of playoff games, and somehow make the World Cup and create like an incredible story.
Okay. So like Northern Ireland making the Euros.
Yes.
Yeah.
Except in more stressful playoff form rather than, than getting through a group. And a longer playoff campaign. Yes. So I think, what will we do next? Oh, yeah, well, might as well put it, because Lockie was kind enough to join us once again. Just share with us, please, your expertise in terms of how the Australians have been getting on in college play this week.
Please. Well, look, I can't say it's been the best week in NCAA Division One. We had a few teams in conference tournaments. For the first time in a long time, we didn't actually have an Aussie win a conference tournament this season. Amy Medwin, former South Melbourne player from Tasmania, her Long Beach State team, they made the final today. They got done 3-0. Oral Roberts with Layla Lopez, fullback from Melbourne, they got beaten by Omaha on penalties. And then a few other teams made semifinals. But so it's going to be slim pickings this year in the NCAA tournament for D1, because we're only going to have three teams. One at-large bid, which will be USC, so Southern California. They finished third in the Pac-12. And their Aussie is backup goalkeeper Talia Grossman, who's actually born and raised in Palo Alto, California. But Australian parents or Australian mother, I think. Testing me there. We do have two conference champions, both coming in the conferences that don't actually use a conference tournament. So the first of those was, of course, Amy Sayer and Stanford University winning the Pac-12. on the final day, they needed a draw to secure the championship, and that's exactly what they got against arch rivals Cal. So they won the Pac-12 outright, earned the auto bid. And then Holly Furphy, so another Australian youth national representative, her Santa Clara team, who were national champions a couple of years ago, the season, a couple of seasons before she joined, they came back from 1-0 down against Pepperdine University to win 2-1 and secure the West Coast Conference Championship. But it looks like we won't have any Aussies actually playing in the first two rounds, because at USC, Talia Grossman's the backup goalkeeper. Holly Furphy at Santa Clara is out for the season after suffering an injury in September. And Amy Say is going to be on Matilda's duty in Melbourne and Gosford for the first two rounds. So Stanford are going to have to do the job in the first two rounds, so Amy can actually play from the round of 16 onwards. If we move to D2, because we did have a little bit of success there. So Ashley Hughes, goalkeeper, former North Shore Mariner and New South Wales futsal superstar. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Eric would be ready to tell you. So she's been starting goalkeeper for Southwestern Oklahoma State, which is not a made-up school, Dale.
I was going to say, there's a lot of names. Yeah,
Southwestern Oklahoma State, so they have been...
I'm not
names and directions.
They have been dominating their conference. And actually, in their semifinal against Oklahoma Baptist, Ash Hughes could have just sat down and read a book because she had zero saves to make in 90 minutes. And then she actually did have work to do in the final. She made six saves as they beat Northwestern Oklahoma State in the final. So conference champions. And then Mississippi College, in probably one of the games of the week. I know there were some electric games in D1, but as far as D2 goes, so Mississippi College, they won their conference championship 4-2. They were down 1-0 at halftime. They were down 1-0 after 53 minutes. They were up 4-1 after 62 minutes.
Wow.
They gave up a goal late on, but they won it 4-2. Unfortunately, Erin Stamatopoulos, former Alamein FC forward, she didn't play for them on this occasion. But in the NCAA D2 tournament, we've also got probably six teams who are a chance of getting an at-large bid. So it's a 56-team tournament in D2. Six other teams that could make it. Selection show is tomorrow, I'm pretty sure, for both NCAA D1 and D2. So we'll find out tomorrow. We've got players like Olivia Riddle, who's a longtime NPL New South Wales player, Jamie Millard, Ayana Ayaji, spent time with Melbourne Victory. And they'll all be nervously watching the selection show tomorrow. And I guess we'll skip NAIA for this week, which is the lower of the four-year college systems, because they've still got eight conference tournaments left and they don't finish until next Sunday. So we'll pick up those results when we have something more concrete. But if we move on to junior conference football, if you are a long-time follower of College Matildas, you will know that the University of Wyoming has had plenty of Aussies over the years. But this year, it's an Aussie at the junior college in Wyoming. So Matisse Loratan from Warners Bay FC, she's been starting regularly for Laramie County. And they got up in an all-Aussie affair against Seminole State from Oklahoma. And Seminole State had Perth SC goalkeeper Shivani Battaglia and former Lions FC forward Sammy Bayer. And Laramie County got up in that one, but Seminole State will still wait on a potential at-large bid. Whilst in the West District Championship, Salt Lake Community College from Utah, featuring Northern Tigers forward Amelia Sumar and Rabina, I'm pretty sure Brisbane Women's Premier League midfielder Isabel Andrews, defeated Arizona Western College on penalties 5-3 after it was nil all after extra time. So we'll have at least two Aussies in the NJCAA D1 national tournament. And then in D2, Northeast, the team we talked about last week that won their regional semi-final 15-0, They travelled to Kansas and beat Pratt 3-1 in the Plains District Final. So we'll have one Aussie team with Aussies at least in the D2 Final. And that Northeast team features Devonport Strikers defender Chelsea Dolble, Moreton Bay United midfielder Mackenzie Stokes, and South United midfielder Kaylee Lincoln. And they all get plenty of playing time, which is the reason we go to college. Play some football and hopefully learn a lot of stuff. And I guess if you're some of these colleges in some of the small towns they'll be in, you will learn plenty.
Yeah, very good point. I do love the small colleges. They love a direction in their
name. Oh, they do.
Yes. So that's how, so just to, for the, perhaps the uninitiated, that's how you know it's a smaller college if it's, say, Western Oklahoma instead of Oklahoma.
Yeah, Southwestern Oklahoma yeah. State versus Northwestern Oklahoma State. A lot smaller schools than Oklahoma State.
Correct.
Is there an official conference that is a direction conference, or is that just a bit of a joke? I thought, I'm pretty sure I've heard people joking about the...
There are some conferences that have a lot of directional schools yeah. in their names. Yeah. Like, even if you think the Mid-American Conference in, like, which is plays FBS football, like, pointy ball, they have Central Michigan, Eastern Michigan, Western Michigan, and Northern Illinois all in. So that's a third of their teams are all... There are, as you drill down, you will get some like really, really small, yeah, directional schools. I guess, yeah, either directional schools or it's teams that are named for states that like they're named after the town but called states.
Oh, yeah, that's
so awful. Like Nichols State, Youngstown State, Wright State. Yeah. Yeah. Usually the biggest two schools are
Boise State.
Boise, weirdly. One of the biggest schools in Idaho.
Yeah, exactly. And they have a blue pitch.
Yes. So usually, like, if the biggest schools in a state are going to be the one that's just the school's, the state's name, and then the one, the state's name with state on the end. So Michigan and Michigan State, Florida and Florida State, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State.
Mm. Yeah. Going back a bit. Oh, sorry. Aaron Stamatopoulos, related to Nia Stamatopoulos? Did we just assume that? Or
maybe, probably. The problem is these small schools don't always fill out their player bios very well.
Yeah.
So, but I do also have some personal honours off the back of Eliza Amendolia's first team selection last week. We had DePaul University's Katie Godden, another futsal superstar, Eric. A former Arsenal Academy player. So she finished as top regular season goal scorer in the Big East Conference, which is one of the bigger leagues in college soccer. And she also earned a conference all first team selection. Of course, she was in that Australian under-23 team that went to AFF Championship earlier this year. And Molly Ahrens broke her leg after just 9 games this season, but did so well in those 9 games that she earned all-conference second-team selection. 3 goals, 7 assists in 9 games before fracturing her fibula. And dropping down to D2, not really dropping down, but moving to D2, Candace Parziani from the Gold Coast at University of Missouri, St. Louis, earned all-conference third-team selection in the Great Lakes Valley Conference. So a little bit of player news there as well. And junior college signing day was this week, and names are flooding in. So I think it's only going to get bigger next season.
Well, it's going to keep you busy. How do you keep up with all this? I'm sure this has been asked before, probably by Stefan, but how? You just don't ask? I shouldn't have asked about that.
Honestly, I am trying to... If you don't know, which you might have assumed from my FIFA Women's World Rankings exploits, I do have a lot of experience programming, scripting. So I'm looking to automate more of my stuff. But at the moment, it's just head down, troll social media, keep up with team rosters.
Got the world's biggest Google notifications list.
Yeah, I was going to say Google Alerts must be wild.
Yeah Google Alerts, RSS feeds. Scripts, social media, tweet deck lists. It is. I mean, I'm sure I miss things. I will freely admit that I miss things, and I know I have and will continue to, because it's just that
you
big.
Try and harder, just... Lockie, obviously.
Oh, yeah. You know, there's only 1,400.
need to outsource some of this on Fiverr or something.
So as I said, NCAA selection shows tomorrow. All the national tournaments kick off this weekend, and then NAIA the following week. So plenty to come, and I'm sure I'll be back next week with more news.
That's great. I'd really, really, really love the College Matildas platform. Make sure you follow it in social media if you're not already. And of course, based on what we just said, if you happen to know that a player's been missed, just let College Matildas know, and Lockie will.
Yeah, shoot him a DM.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so on to our beloved national team. So I'll just briefly cover this as we need to crack on, but the Junior Matildas played the second and third of their three-game series with South Korea up on the Gold Coast. So a 1-1 draw last Wednesday, followed by a tight 1-0 loss on Friday night. I've linked to the YouTube highlights in our pod notes. And I don't know if anyone else has any thoughts, but of course, we've got to be easy on them. We're talking about players possibly as young as 13 playing their first, having their first national team experience. And really, it's all about giving them the taste and then hope, watching the progress over this cycle. I'm really excited for yet another Junior Tillies cycle. Also, I did like that with the filming position being nowhere near halfway and the diagonal view of the pitch, it reminded me of the first FIFA game. So really nostalgic stuff for me.
I was just going to say Peter Moore Field, but yeah.
Oh, yes.
Peter Moore Field has a shocking angle.
Oh, my goodness. And hopefully, I think the lighting was better than Peter Moore Field.
Okay. In
Belmore, at least. But yes, I mean, we've discussed possibly our pregame beverage plans for Matildas v Sweden anymore, but I might as well chuck it to all of you. What are our thoughts on the actual game? Of course, Saturday at Melbourne at, what do we call that venue?
Because
we
prefer
Swan Street. Yeah, Swan Street. We don't like to use sponsor names on Beyond 90. So Swan Street in Melbourne, Matildas versus Sweden. Who wants to go first?
Looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a fun game. I actually it'll go up on social media soon, but we just had a bit of a fan chat with a Swedish fan with Matildas Active yesterday afternoon. So I think they're missing a few of their big players, and I think one of the things they were talking about was like wanting to see some new players get blooded in the Swedish team. So we might possibly see some experimentation from them. But I think from our perspective, I think we just really want to see some progression on what was the great performance in the last two games that we had. The midfield really looked like it was starting to connect with the forward play as well. I think having Steph Catley back was wonderful. Caitlin Ford being in form. So just hoping for more of the same and seeing a progression is what I think a lot of Matildas fans will be looking for.
I'm wondering whether we're going to be, as you said, the point that you made about Hatley being back, going to be seeing more of the Chidiak Gori combination.
Look, I said that from the very beginning. I wanted Chidiak and Gori on the field at the same time. More, please.
I don't think that anybody who has an ounce of sense would disagree with that. And if they do disagree, I think that discounts them from any further discussions. it's going to be nice them to be back in Melbourne, playing in Melbourne. Obviously, they'll generally get a pretty good crowd there. Tickets are going pretty well. There's only a few spots, there's a few bays with tickets left at each end, but ticket sales look really good. The point that you make about Sweden, I think that Sweden to me are one of those teams for the Matildas that play a style of football that points out our weaknesses really well. I know I haven't seen their squad, but I would assume that if they're sending a relatively decent squad, then you've got players like Kosovari Aslani, Stina Blackstenius.
Aslani, I think, is injured now, I think.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. But, I mean, you think about the way that they played at the Olympics, and I feel that a lot of the ways that they play would and did kind of show off our weaknesses, similar to the way that Canada played, very disciplined counter-attacking football. Sweden, I think, are a little more technical and a little less physical, I guess is the wrong word, but I'm sure you understand. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing how we match up against the challenge that they'll bring. Also going to be interesting to see how Tony G goes coaching against Sweden after they beat us in the bronze medal playoff. In the semi-final. But yeah, really looking forward to it, and should be a great shout. Always great to get to a game at Swan Street. It's one of the best grounds in the country.
And pre-game drinks are going to be at the London Tavern Hotel.
London Tavern.
Google on some street up. I think it's off of Swan Street in Richmond.
So not a long walk at all, I'm guessing?
No.
Ah, excellent. Of course. You, Matilda's actor support, they definitely know what they're doing with choice of pre-match meetups and drinks. They always pick the best venue. So of course, we've talked about the junior Matildas and the senior Matildas, so might as well talk about the young Matildas, Australia's under 20s, because it's Monday, which means there was yet another national team announcement for what feels like the 400th Monday in a row. The young Matildas will play three games in the Canberra area this week. So Tuesday the 8th, 5 p.m. against Solomon Islands at the AIS, Friday the 11th, 5 p.m. at the AIS against Fiji, and Sunday the 13th, 4 p.m. at Seyfert Oval against Papua New Guinea. So perhaps if you're unable to get to Melbourne for Matildas versus Sweden and you're in the area, there's a good chance for you to watch some national team action. So I'll throw it to Lockie, because we all know why. The young Matilda squad released today. Who would you like to talk about, Lockie?
There's one player. Yes. Her first name is Claudia, and her second name is Chico.
Yes.
I mean, fanboying aside, I mean, we all know how much Eric and I both love this young Apia Leichhardt defender, but I mean, she should have been in the A-League Women last season.
Correct.
I think it's great that she's got a spot with Wellington, and I mean, the call-up is fully deserved. She has been electric in MPL New South Wales for what, three seasons now?
Yeah, two as a starter, and then I think little bits of the 2020 season involving really throwing herself about and making some very senior players angry in a particular game between Institute and Spartans. I'd say one of the best fouls I've ever seen in my life. But go on, Rocky.
I like aside from the call up, I like that her first foray into the dub is at Wellington.
Yes.
I think if it's not going to be with Sydney FC, where she's really close to home, I think being in that kind of almost like an international where she's, you know, really looked after by the club kind of thing will really help. Where rather than being maybe like, you know, not saying that clubs don't look after players that are locals, but you know, if she's young and she's got to go out to Western Sydney or up to Newcastle to play, it's a very different situation to being really housed by the club.
Yeah,
I shouldn't be at Wellington.
And of course, the fun is she will do her HSC in New Zealand, so that'll be quite the learning experience for her. But you know, it's not unheard of in terms of elite athletes in this country. Also, just a bit more on Claudia. She used to be a forward, was converted to a defender when she got to Apia, and so you could see it shows in how good she is on the ball. But you know, right back, centre back, right wing back, they'll figure it out when they get there. But she can play all those positions really well. So Badge, have you seen any of the Queensland quartet in this squad?
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of Zara Kruger. She plays for Lions, so that's probably who I've seen most of in the NPL season. So, yeah, just a great young player who's come through the Lions there this season. And, of course, I mean, I think Ella O'Grady and Ella O'Grady was over in the AFF squad, I think. And Jonty Fisher was as well. I think I always remember Jonty Fisher. She scored a banger for QAS from the sideline, very acute angle this past NPL season. So, yes, can absolutely slot the ball in for a nice goal. So, yes, good to see them continuing to get their call-ups.
Yeah, and I think I'm sure Dale will agree when I shout at this fellow Canberran, as will Stefan, not with us, Sasha Grove. Good to see her in a national team squad after she was so unlucky being 2 days old, too old to be in the last junior Matilda cycle. The ones
2 days old.
Oh, so 2 days too old, yeah.
Of course she couldn't get in. She was an infant.
Yes. It's not a pot or even my commentary if I don't butcher a phrase. But yeah,
it's good to see her get a run. Yes, I think she has a lot to learn, but she reminds me of, I mean, this is a very strange comparison, but like Hayley Taylor-Young, in that she is obviously very talented. That talent just needs to be harnessed and molded a little bit. But, you know, this is why they play these games. Also cool to see that they're playing against senior teams. I think this is one thing that, yeah, so the three teams that they're playing, the Solomons, Fiji and Papua New Guinea, are all sending their senior teams. I think that's a really good option. And I also think it's a really good option for the island teams or the Pacific teams, just because they're not really going to get an opportunity to play against anybody outside of New Zealand in a professional quote-unquote setting. And I think playing at the AIS for these senior women's teams, I think will be obviously a really good opportunity, but also I think something that we should be looking to provide as kind of the, I guess, big sister in the neighborhood.
Yeah, and of course, being such smaller nations, was it Solomon Islands, Fiji, and Papua New Guinea, there's a reasonable chance that they've got under 20s in there. Under 20s anyway.
Yeah.
I'm glad Stefan pointed this out on Twitter just before we recorded, but I do like players that are, although I love the NTCs, but I like players who get noticed from outside these NTCs or in Football New South Wales Institutes or whatever. So big shout out to Meg Roden from Canberra Olympic for getting in the squad, and also Zara Board from Subiaco in Western Australia getting another call up. Just briefly thinking of players that caught my eye from NPL New South Wales, Chloe Willando. I've rated for a couple of years up at Emerging Jets. She's probably a fullback, but can also play as a kind of a central midfielder if they need. And a couple of her Jets teammates, Zoe Karapetis and Josie Allen, are in the squad. Shay Holman, who really committed Sydney FC fans will remember for, I think, one substituted appearance last season. She's been impressive for Football New South Wales Institute this year. Sienna Savesca, who I'm annoyed because she should have been announced by her A-League Women's Club by now, whoever that is. But
it's literally in the... It's in the...
Yes, that's right.
Western Sydney Wanderers, what are you doing?
Yes, please.
Turn on your laptop. Make a Photoshop. Do a picture. It's not that hard. One today. Look at this. Look at this background. I cropped this. I didn't make this, but I cropped it. See, how hard was that? Give me a job. Please don't give me a job. I don't want to work for your club.
And can I just say, having worked for the Wanderers, I don't want to go back. Anyway. But Sienna Savesca can score some absolute bangers and has done so in NPL New South Wales this year. So the kind of person's a threat from 30, 35 yards out. Also, interesting to see that the New South Wales Futsal Premier League has been affected by international call-ups, because Tegan Bertolisio and Maya Lobo are currently playing for Campbelltown City Quake. And that's not the only international call-up that Quake have, because they've lost Chantel Maniti to the Philippines national team as well. So incredible that...
Oh God, that Venn diagram of your interest is a sphere, Jesus Christ.
The most airing content in history.
Yeah, I was going to say, Western Sydney... Futsal and the Philippines.
Yes. Oh,
man alive. Three dimensions. We are through the looking glass, people.
Yes, I love that. I get along with the coach Mel Keith, who is not... This is far from the first time she's lost players to youth international call-ups. She seems to be the only coach in the league that gets smashed with it. But
former teammate of Beyond 90 alumna Samantha Lewis at Eskol Park, I believe.
Yep, it would be Eskol Park before a thing that we should definitely not talk about. Mm-hmm. But
let's not talk about that. We're going to get hit with the information.
Yeah, we're going to get in trouble. But, you know, Mel Keith is absolutely wonderful, even if potentially some other people are not.
Yeah, she's a good egg.
Yeah, she's great. That's enough. Oh, just briefly, I'll run through tournament draws, because we have... the qualifying path, at least for the first round of qualifiers for both the under 17 and under 20 Asian Cups in 2024. So the junior Tillies, they'll be going to Mongolia to face Mongolia, Taiwan, I refuse to use that name, and Bhutan. So we'll see how that shakes out. And then the under 20s, they're going to Kyrgyzstan to face the Kyrgyz Republic, Guam, or as I like to call them, North Philippines, and Iraq. So my niche amusement here was that Jess Nash's Jess Nash's international debut was captaining the Junior Matildas as a 13-year-old in Kyrgyzstan, and hey, she might go back and do it again. So,
gonna say we've really lucked out with some tough groups in these ones.
Yeah,
I will be interesting to see how those of you who will remember the 2020 Olympics qualifying tournament will remember that Taiwan were in our group. So I'll be super interested to see what their under-17s look like, because they don't have a huge population, but I think that they punch above their weight in terms of Asian football. They have won two Asian Cups, Asian Women's Cups. So, but yeah, pretty interesting group. I mean, Guam, I remember watching Guam play on a stream against, it might have been Japan on YouTube in like a World Cup qualifier. And it was like, Guam Stadium is literally, if you took Inlandon Sports Park or like one of those small grounds and put it in tropical paradise, it's just like, it's kind of like Gosford, but better.
Are you saying that the Botany Bay area is not a tropical paradise?
Imagine if Botany Bay was 26 degrees all year round and nobody had any worries. It's just like that.
Is Belinda Wilson still with their national team set up? Ex-Brisbane Roar coach?
It
was for quite a while. I'm trying to search as we speak.
Is she a LinkedIn? Oh, God. I don't know why I went to LinkedIn. There's like a million Belinda Wilsons.
I was going to say,
PFA technical director as of March 22. Oh, hang on. Now I've seen another one to leave Guam. Oh, no, that's 2019. So possibly she is. She might still be involved with them.
That's it. March 2022. She's no. So hopefully she's still there, because based on what Dale described, Guam seems like a really lovely place. I'd say the. I remember getting absolutely eaten alive by mosquitoes at Inlandon Sports Centre during a game, and I think that was the only tropical feeling thing about the venue.
Yeah, hopefully they don't have that same kind of experience in Kyrgyzstan. Yes. Yeah, although we have discussed Kyrgyzstan quite a lot in the last 4 days off mic, and yeah, hopefully they enjoy their time there.
Yep. So let's once again, we're running long. We always run long, but just briefly. We won't go through every A-League women signing announced over the past week, but this is the obvious one to talk about. Elise Keller-Knight going to Melbourne Victory. So rest in peace to the other 10 clubs, I think.
The Melbourne Victory are feeling very Brisbane Roar from a couple of seasons ago, and it didn't work out well for us. So that's what I'm holding out hope for.
Yeah. What era of Brisbane Roar are you feeling? Are you feeling like jumping up and down in the wall in the semi-final era at Brisbane Roar? That was a good banter era, Brisbane Roar.
Oh, no, that was, not that era. A season, 2 seasons ago. The one where KK came back. KK, Emily Gilnick, Tamika, Liv Chance, Katrina, but Katrina Gorry got pregnant.
I was going to say that was the season that Minnie stepped away, if I remember correctly.
They're looking very formidable. It'll be interesting to see how it goes, and no doubt Jeff will do a very good job of bringing the team together. Really excited to not only just see KK back, but I'm really looking forward to seeing Beattie go back in.
Agreed.
So is Lockie.
Yep.
Oh, you know it.
What was her major at uni?
Well, she just did a medical. She was just published in a medical journal, so I'm guessing medicine.
Yep. I was going to say like space maths or something, but yeah, medicine seems
space maths.
Space math.
I saw this on Twitter. And I didn't understand what the paper was about. So yes,
me neither. Yeah, I shared it on College Matilda's social. I was just like, if you want to know what it's actually about, talk to Beattie.
Also, interesting and good signing, and thing that we would like to see more of, Xiao Yu Yi signing for Adelaide. We need more Asian players, please. They're right there, literally right there. And
familiar with Pine Marsh for the World Cup next year as well?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking, would they have been familiar with Pine Marsh? They might have won an Asian Cup there in 2006.
Yes, if there's some officials still around. Yes. Yeah.
She has, I'm just having a look, 31 caps for the Chinese national team, 5 goals, plays as a midfielder, and is on loan from Shanghai Xingli.
And wasn't one of those goals the winner in the Asian Cup final?
It could. Well, it was. Sure. Well done. Very good. I'm genuinely impressed by that.
No, that's just that's Adelaide's announcement article. That's not me.
Oh.
Relax. As you've known me for too long to fall for that one. But so Zhao Yui, Chinese in Adelaide United, hoping to follow in the footsteps of Shen Qingchu, I assume.
Yes.
There is a blast from the past.
Yes, very good memory.
Yeah, and I think obviously we'll put the latest week of signings in the pod notes. Big shout out to Sophia Christofferson, going from Canberra United Academy to Canberra United. So good to see that.
We love an academy signing.
And just briefly, we want to say the official A-League Women Fantasy and Tipping comps are open. So log on, as we said earlier, if you want to see the six players that the Wanderers haven't announced yet. But more importantly, if you want to get on, have a bit of fun with that, because it's certainly great fun, and you will definitely do better than my team, that's for sure.
Also, Dale says we need, or obviously we do need more players from AFC nations, but with Katie Bowen signing for Melbourne City, we can always use more University of North Carolina alums.
Yep. I you feel very strongly co-sign about this. I don't want to disagree.
Yeah. I co-sign with great trepidation.
Alicia Russo, if you ever want to come to Australia,
oh my god, I will happily second that if Alicia Russo ever wants to play in Australia.
Another fantastic WSL player. Yep. Speaking of
WSL, so now a little bit of trepidation because perhaps there's a result that one of us doesn't want to talk about. But the thing that caught my eye is Brighton and Hove Albion getting the new manager bounce in the weirdest possible way. So they copped an 8-0 loss to Tottenham last week, and Hope Powell, a longtime manager and English football legend, stepped down. They copped an early goal then against West Ham, but recovered to win by 5-4 in a game that I have to watch in full just to understand what happened. But anyone else have any particular takes from last night's WSL action?
Just talk about the Chelsea game, Eric. Fine. I can take it.
Okay. So, yes. Yeah, Chelsea defeated Manchester United 3-1 away from home. So the standard Sam Kerr full game plus goal plus assist. I love Sam Kerr's nutmeg shot. The fake to get the defender to stick a leg out, then just slipped it between the feet and into the bottom corner. The assist, perfectly timed pass for Lauren James. That was a nice finish in its own right. But hey, your favorite Alessio Russo scored off a brilliant ball from Ella Toon. So that's something for Manchester United as well. Also, let's see. Commiserations to Emma Mukandi, formerly known as Emma Mitchell, for scoring 2 own goals against Manchester City, as Manchester City beat Reading 3-0. But great assist from Mary Fowler. And, how did I forget this? Steph Catley Olympico, as Arsenal beat Leicester City 4-0. That was
very good. A lot of rain in the London area over the last few days. Three games called off. Palace, Spurs v Everton was meant to be played at Leighton Orient, called off. Palace versus Sheffield was meant to be played at Bromley, was called off. Lewis versus Bristol, which obviously played at the Dripping Pan, was called off. That's down close to the Amex, where Farmer Stadium, where Brighton and Hove Albion men play. And yeah, all called off. So not good. Just more fixture congestion, especially with all the cups coming up.
Yep. So let's move on. France. Oh, I can't remember the last time this happened. Lyon and PSG drop points on the same weekend. So,
There's only 4 points between first and third at the moment in France. So it's Lyon in first on 19, PSG on 17, and then Paris FC on 15. And then there's a bit of a fall away. I think Montpellier are on 9 points. But I was just having a quick look while we were having a yarn earlier. Lydia Williams not even on the match card at the moment for PSG. She hasn't made an appearance for PSG since I believe the week after she played against Canada. So really got to ask what's happening there. I thought that this move was going to be really positive, and unfortunately it seems that that is not the case. I would not be surprised if she looks to go out on loan in January.
I think, for the good of herself and the Matildas, please. I think she just needs to get game time.
Yeah, please. Okay. There's plenty of clubs that will take her. It's just going to be a matter of she desperately needs to get some game time.
Yep. So of course we can't cover all of this, but the goal in Germany, Madge will cover at the end of the show, but Alex Gummer scored for a Swiss second division side, Turnberner Oberland, as they beat Lugano 5-1. So not a regular goal scorer, but good to see her make her mark. And in the Nordic competitions, I think we've got to breeze through this, but obviously read our Nordic Wrap, which comes out on Friday mornings, written by myself and Stefan. But just briefly, Matilda McNamara played yet another full game for AGF. They did, but they lost 2-1 to Bronbu. I think Matilda's played every minute of the league season for AGF so far, so that's working out for her. And a real Aussie reunion when Nordsjælland played Fortuna Hearing. Nordsjælland came back from 2 goals down to draw 2-2. Winona Heatley played a full game. They seem to do better when she does that, as opposed to being an unused substitute. And Angie Beard and Indy Riley came off the bench. But now, finally, we're
About Tegan Micah?
Sorry.
Trophies.
Yeah. Oh, he's kept, yes. Stefan is very keen in our pod notes to remind us that Rosengard are champions. They did this 3 weeks ago. He just keeps saying they're confirmed as champions every week since then. thanks for making sure, just in case maybe they might have lost it. Nope. Tegan Micah's FC Rosengard, Swedish champions, another full game and a clean sheet for Tegan. Standard Tegan Micah stuff. And yeah, that's it. And also, Kyra Cooney Cross didn't get player of the match. So that's a bit unusual, yeah. But maybe there's
got to be an investigation.
Yeah. Maybe. Right. That's maybe they just got to share it around. But yes, time for, I think, our favorite part of the podcast or near the end, but it's the Queens / Kings / non-binary legends of the week. So I think, Dale, would you like to go first?
Oh, yeah. I don't actually have a coin of the week this week, but I would like to give a entity of the week.
Sure.
LAFC won their first MLS Cup today on penalties against Philadelphia. They are the brother club of Angel City, and atmosphere was electric. So was one man's leg by the end of it, but don't look that up. So big ups to them. Pretty great to see that they're, I mean, of all the success that Angel City have had in their inaugural season, it's also been good to see that their brother club has been sending the success around as well. And my Joker of the Week is FIFA for the ticketing debacle. It makes me mad.
Okay, so I think, Madge, we've waited long enough. Tell us about your Queen of the Week.
Oh, yeah, I've absolutely got to give a shout out to Anna Margraf, who scored her first goal for SV Meppen in the Bundesliga in Germany. Fantastic to see her obviously going well. It seems like she's been getting lots of starts, lots of minutes. 2-0 win for them over Werder Bremen. So great work by Anna. Lovely to see. I do have a joker as well. Mm-hmm. Just got to, give it to the AFL for scheduling their AFLW semi-finals at the same time, both in Melbourne against the Matildas game. So a lot of women's sports fans not very happy about not being able to see both, two great events in Melbourne.
Sorry, both semi-finals?
Yeah, they overlap at the timing. Yep.
Games. Yes. AFL is a silly sport. I will not hear it.
I agree. So, Lockie, you've got a long list as usual, and they all deserve these shout-outs, good and bad.
Yeah, so mine, Molly Ahrens for her second All-Southland Conference second team selection, despite only playing 9 games and then getting injured. I think if she'd played the whole season, she would have probably beaten the College Matildas record for assists in a season, which I think is 12 at the moment. And Katie Godden. DePaul struggled for most of the season. They were never really in the conference championship race, and she still managed to finish top goal scorer and yet all Big E's first team. And I do have a joker this week, and it takes a lot for me to say bad things about the Pac-12, but you had UCLA and Stanford tied going into the final day, no simultaneous kickoffs. So by the time it got to the end of halftime in Stanford's game against California, UCLA, it was already known they were going to lose. They were 2-0 down with 10 minutes to play. So Stanford, by that time, already knew they only needed a draw to secure the championship, which they promptly got.
Unfortunately, I'm not surprised by this, considering this is a sporting organization that has a countdown clock. So,
and the funny thing is, of all the conferences, the Pac-12 has five regional networks plus its main channel that they could have shown all the games on.
Well, that's it's more confusing things in American college sport. But, of course, Cheryl and Stefan very kindly nominated people, even though they couldn't be with us at the time of recording. So Cheryl just wanted to shout out Hope Powell for her contribution to football and for making a tough call to leave Brighton and Hove Albion. And see, there were some kind words from Michelle Walder, who said, "Hope's contribution to the development of women's and girls' football at our club and for the women's game in this country cannot be underestimated." So we hope that Hope Powell lands on her feet somewhere really soon and, you know, continues to develop the women's game in England. And Stefan, what a surprise, his Queen of the Week is someone who signed a contract with Canberra United. So congratulations to Sophia Christofferson again, who I mentioned earlier, the first outfield local since Sasha Grove from the 2020-21 season to break into the National League from NPL Capital Football and secure an A-League women contract. So my King of the Week is Matthias Mildahl from AGF Aarhus for being so helpful when I wanted to get a custom Matilda McNamara jersey. He not only arranged for it to be shipped to Australia, something AGF don't usually do, but he also got Matilda McNamara to send me a signed thank you note and a signed player card. And here it is. And I am treating this with more respect than my actual important life documents, because that's the kind of person that I am. So I think that's just about it for the Beyond 90 podcast.
Yeah, just one thing, Eric, is that AGF jersey, that's the old Premier League player font, or very close to it. Ooh, is it not?
Very similar, yes.
Okay, so it's here.
We love it.
Yeah, that's where I've seen it before. Yes, I think, not that it, my virtual background doesn't show, but that's very, especially the number. That's where I'd seen it before. So this kind of looks like a Spurs jersey. So thanks, Lockie. Anyone have anything else to add?
Negatory blue leader.
Yep. Okay. So, well, on that note, thanks for joining us once again for the Beyond 90 podcast. Wishing you all the best of vibes and hope your life is full of tattoos and razzlers. On behalf of Madge, Lockie, and Dale, see you next time.